accession number 18262, Reel 7.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it was not a very good idea to get toothache in the camp, because the Chinese, as I said, never had any dentists there. And I think the nearest dentists were probably about in China, I should think, or Pyongyang or somewhere like that. But there was in the camp a chap with a rusty pair of pliers. Where he got them from, picked them up, I don't know, but he carried them about with him. And that was our dentist. We had no form of morphine or anything like that to kill the toothache. We had nothing in the way of medical provisions. The Chinese had nothing in the way of medical provisions. And what it done, it took three chaps that hold one man down with a toothache. You'd hold him, lay him on the floor, and you'd lay on his arms and his legs, hold him down and open his mouth. And the chap would go in with a rusty pair of pliers, and eventually, after a bit of struggling, would pull the chap's tooth out. He had no painkillers at all. But as I said to one of the chaps, after he'd had it done one day, I said, how'd you feel? He said, not too good. He said, but it was a darn sight better than having that toothache, he said. He said it was agony. So anyhow, but lucky enough, there was only about, to my knowledge, about four, five chaps. The whole lot of us had, anyone that had the toothache. And I dreaded it myself. Although I suppose I've been lucky, I've always looked after my teeth. As time went on, the following summer, after the winter, the following summer, we started to be taken up into the hills, into the mountains around the village, and collecting our own firewood. Every man had to bring back so many catties, that's a Chinese weight, so many catties of timber. And each man had to carry so much back. If you never carry your quota back, you were sent back into the mountains again to get another lump of wood to make your weight up. So there was no slacking, more or less. Everyone was equal under the Chinese conditions. Everyone was equal, and everyone had to carry the as much weight as they could in logs. Of course, the strongest chaps amongst us could carry the largest log, and therefore we never went back to the hills twice. Some of the smaller chaps had to go back twice to get their about of timber. We'd cut our own timber down up in the hills and slide it down the mountains. Down the side of the mountains, and eventually carry it back, even if it meant two men carrying one huge log. Some of the larger logs was nearly a foot across the base, I suppose. And these we'd cut slices off and make our own dartboards out of these, and I eventually ended up making darts for most of the chaps in the camp, making the sets of darts by cutting the wood and drilling it at the pointed end with a piece of stiff wire, and putting points in and things like that. And each dart I made had a different length of wire wrapped around the base of it to make it each weight. So therefore, we ended up with a few dart teams, and it was quite interesting then. In the summertime in Korea, as I said, the countryside is beautiful. It is beautiful in the hills and the mountains. And up there, we found a lot of ground grapes growing. Tiny grapes that spread over the ground, blue, little blue grapes, and they were beautiful, sweet. And there was a tree we came across with very, very sweet fruit, full of seeds, and it looked like a fig, of some sort of fig. But we called them figs, but whether it was or not, but we used to pick this green fruit, and it was beautiful, sweet, and we were lacking sugar in the camp at the time. We had no sugar. And we found that this gave us the extra vitamins, because previously that, in the summer, where the chaps were, we were short of vitamins, and basically with rice and beans and the odd bits of meat that was cooked in your food, basically you were sort of, you had the wrong vitamins. You were not receiving the amount of vitamins you could be. And chaps were going down with night blindness. Now, a night blindness is caused by lack of vitamins and lack of the infrared from the sunshine. What happens directly the sun goes down at night time, the chap who's suffering from night blindness goes blind. He can't see anything. And it was quite funny, and sometimes we used to laugh about it, where you see a column of chaps with their arms on the shoulders of the ones in front being taken across to the toilet across the other side of the road, 8 or 10 of them in a long column. And of course, people that could see and hadn't suffered from night blindness would sort of take the mickey out of these chaps, and they all took it all in good humour. And it was things that kept us smiling in the camp, I suppose, little things like that. Eventually, the Chinese bought in vitamin pills, and night blindness vanished altogether then. Directly you had these vitamin pills, the night blindness vanished. But it was quite funny at the time. Now, lice was starting to come into the camp. I suppose come into the camp. Lice and flies in the summertime were a pest. The cause of it was that our latrines at the time were in the centre of the huts in the middle of the village. It was an open latrine with a cover over the top of it and a bar all the way round, which you sat on and hung on for dear life in case you fell back into the pit. And on the way, on the march, I suppose, through drinking the paddy water, people had ingested germs from the paddy fields and things like that, and river flukes and worms and things like that, they must have sucked up in there. And some of the chaps were suffering from worms in their stomach, inside their stomach, and when they had a touch of the dysentery caused by it, some were still suffering from dysentery. When they were suffering dysentery, a worm had come out with it at the same time. And the Chinese saw this and got worried. It was getting worried about it. And I always remember I saw my first worm. I've never seen anything like it. I was sat on the bar as well. We called it the bar in the toilet, next to this chap, and he started to cough. And I said, what's the matter? He said, I don't know. He said, I got something in my throat. And he started to cough. And he coughed up a worm into his hand, a big, long, pink worm. It must have been 6 inches long, I suppose. And God almighty, I thought, Christ, we haven't got all these in our body, have we? And he coughed that up. Eventually, the Chinese brought in some... Well, they brought it round in a bath. There was a sort of epidemic going round the camp, and no one knew what it was, couldn't find out what it was. Could it have been caused through these worms and things like that? And they were giving us tablets, and they were making this medicine stuff. It smelt like and tasted like Jay's fluid. They put it in the water, and everyone had to drink a cupful of it. And it eventually... I think it got rid of the majority of the worms in the person. It eventually killed them, I suppose. And we started to get better health from then on. Because a lot of chat, don't matter what you ate, if you had the worm inside of you, you wouldn't put on weight. Well, none of us weren't putting on weight at all, actually. And we didn't realize it till we came out of the prisoner of war camp and saw the size of the chaps that met us at Khe Somme when we were released. We didn't realize how thin we were. All that's, then someone had the bright idea of trying to make some wine. As I say, this fruit that was growing up on the side of the hill. They started to make wine, but we had nothing to put in it. And I know eventually we found out that the Chinese had sugar in their huts. They were using sugar. And we complained about it so much that they allowed us probably an ounce a week of just sugar grain because we said we wanted it in our milk. Now, you'd be surprised to think that we said milk. I said milk. Now, this milk was made out of soybeans. Soybeans that are ground down and water is added to it. And the juice and the water that comes out of the soybean is white. And it's just like milk. And I think at the time now in the shops you can get soya milk. I have seen it in cartons in supermarkets. At the time then, we'd never seen it before, this soybean milk. And the Chinese started, and they were making it, and they allocated each person in the camp, in each hut. Each person had a cup of soya milk to drink, all help towards vitamins for you. And we complained that the soya milk was very bitter, very sour, and we couldn't drink it. So they gave us an ounce of sugar, I suppose, a week, a little spoonful to wrap in your, put into your soya milk, so it's drinkable. Getting back to the beer now, the ale that we're making. They collect the fruit, and we were, as we went through the town, carrying the logs and that, any tin we saw lying about, or bin, or anything like that, tubs, that were movable, that the Koreans left about, we shifted them. They were taken back to the camp, and they were digging the floor up, putting these tubs into the floor, filling them with water, throwing all this rice and potato peeling, which they were bringing in potatoes as well for us at the time. And rice, potato peeling, sourdough from the bread that we were making, our own bread, our own rolls. And throwing this all in the bin, and everyone would allocate a couple of spoonfuls of sugar. Anyhow, chaps were making this stuff, and you could go into their huts and you could smell it. It was brewing away underneath the floor, and you could smell. It was like a hop brewery, you could smell it there. And one or two of the chaps, sort of getting anxious about it, started to drink it while it was still bubbling. And two or three of them were staggering around the camp drunk, and the Chinese couldn't make it out. What are they doing drunk? And I don't know how they got the word to it. Anyhow, this day they got everyone on the square and said, you all must go into the hills. No one is to remain behind in the camp. You must go to the hills. Your food will be taken up to you. You will cut down wood until it is time to come back. So that was it. It was a lovely day. We thought, lovely, smashing. They brought the bowls, big bowls of rice up to us, the Chinese did. And we sat there all day studying nature. And or I did. I studied nature and watched the birds, listened to birds and insects and animals. And it was quite nice, actually. We arrived back in the camp in the evening, went to the huts, and then the shout started. Everyone said they'd been here. What's that? Who been here? Them bloody Chinese. They found every tub where the beer was being brewed in and tipped it out everywhere. every tub that was in the hut, and there wasn't a beer tub left in there. They found every one of them. They'd had the floors up, everything. Where they were hidden, in the roof, everything. They'd had they'd cleared the whole village of brewing, and that done away with our brewing. By this time, the Americans were coming up to the hills as well. They were getting their own timber. They were getting a lot stronger. And we were talking to them quite a lot. And they were coming up into the hills, and they were bringing back timber as well for the winter. And the Americans, unbeknown to us, I mean, we'd never heard of marijuana before, but the Americans had. I suppose they call it pot. It was smoked in America, in the countryside there. Now, the Korean has been smoking pot all of his life. They have tiny bowls which holds about a thimbleful of tobacco, which with marijuana leaves, dried marijuana leaves, mixed in with the tobacco. And this is the Korean peasant smokes this all the time. And it don't seem to affect them because they mix tobacco with it. I can always tell you a funny thing. Before I knew anything about marijuana, before the Chinese ever found out that the Americans were smoking pot, if they did, they'd lock them up for about a week, solitary confinement, until they got over the habit, more or less, try and break them of the habit. Eventually, a few of our chaps were locked up as well. They were smoking it neat, and unbeknown to us, it grew wild on the side of the mountains. We didn't know what it was, but the Korean peasant did, and he showed some of the chaps what it was and what it was for. And some of the chaps ended up baking it on the fires and smoking it, see. But the Korean was smoking it with tobacco. He'd picked it, unbeknown to us. I always remember, I thought, before I ever saw this, marijuana. I was sat on the side of the mountain one summer afternoon, and a roaring came down through the valley, and down, I was halfway up the side of this mountain in the scrub, I suppose, and down through the valley came a MiG-15, a Russian MiG-15, came down through the valley with a saber in pursuit, a saber jet in pursuit. And he flew right down through our valley, through the camp, and flashed away into the distance. We heard an explosion, and we didn't know what happened. Anyhow, after all the excitement, I was sat down studying nature once again. Heard an explosion in the distance. Whether the plane had been hit or not, we don't know. I was so high up the side of the mountain, I could look through the scrub, and you could see the pilots, between the two pilots, as the planes were lowering us in the valley. After all the excitement, I sat down on the log that I had, ready to take back to the camp, and started studying nature. And out of the rocks at the side of me came this little ground squirrel, which I didn't even know existed in Korea. But a pretty little thing, a little brown and white thing, scampering about there. It was all quiet. I was on my own, listening and watching, and eating a couple of these figs that I had, chewing them, and a peasant came down the hill leading an oxen. The old oxen are very docile things. And he smiled and bowed to me, and I sort of nodded my head back to him. And he came and sat on the log next to me. And in his, my pidgin Korean and Chinese, and his pidgin English, we tried to get to understand one another. And he got his little pipe out, and I offered him some of my tobacco I had. Oh, at the time, the Chinese were supplying tobacco with us at the time. They used to come up in pound packs, like they used to supply the tea, loose tea at one time, in pound packs, like you could buy in England. And I offered him some tobacco. He brought his little silver pipe out and put some tobacco. He showed me his pipe, and I offered him the tobacco of mine, and he put it into his pipe. And he got his tobacco out and offered me some out of his tobacco. And I said, I never had a pipe, so I'd roll a bit. And I took a leaf out of the Bible again, and I rolled the tobacco. Well, unbeknown to me, marijuana was mixed in with it, and I didn't know. I'd never had it. I was smoking away at this cigarette, and all of a sudden my head started to go round. And I was as high as a kite there, and I didn't know what it was. I thought something I'd eaten or something. And of course the old Korean got up, and he was smiling to himself. He bowed and off he went and left me to it. He smoked his tobacco and off he went and left me. I thought, God almighty, what's happening to me? Anyhow, I sort of staggered, and the chap said, what's the matter with you? I said, I don't know. I said, a bit lightheaded. I feel very lightheaded and that. But I didn't smoke at all. I just took two or three drags of it, and I threw it away because I couldn't stick it. And by the time I got back to the camp, my head had cleared. And then when I spoke to the Americans about it, they said, oh, you smoked the old pot. I said, I didn't, did I? I said, yes. That's what you were smoking. And that was the last and only time I ever drank it, ever smoked it. Oh, dear. Eventually, the Chinese started to bring in live food on the hoof for us, because the summer was so hot that the frozen carcasses that they brought in didn't last long. They had no way of cooling it, keeping it cool, so we really had to eat it. I mean, they say a lot of meat was brought in, but when you have over 3,000 chaps in the camp, I suppose, of Americans, other troops and that, in the camp, a bullock didn't go very far. A carcass of a bullock, which they was chopped up very, very small and mixed in with the rice. So they started to bring it in on the hoof. Pigs and oxen. Now, these oxen had been used for, like the Korean oxen was used, for working in the fields, in the paddy fields, and they were very, very docile. So one day, walking a pass I walked over this river bridge that led to the town of Cheongsong, and took this small road back to the camp. On the corner there was a blacksmith sat down, making an axe out of a piece of metal. And I sat down and watched him. It was a blacksmith shop there. Actually, the blacksmith shop was alongside an American tank that had been blown up at the side of this road. And I sat there watching him and talking to him and that, and watching him, and because I was very interested in what he was doing. Oh, by the way, you may be thinking why the Chinese were providing all these things for us, like the meat, tobacco, sugar, other things that was coming in, but it wasn't coming in great quantities. We were only allocated small amounts of all this stuff. It was because in the beginning of the war, when the Chinese came into the Korean War, they saw the conditions that the prisoners were under the North Koreans, which had done their training under the Japanese conditions in the last war. And they saw the conditions of the prisoners, and the Chinese government took over all of the prison camps in North Korea. I suppose they didn't want to to hear of a world outcry over the condition of some of the prisoners that they could, the North Koreans controlled. So they took over all prison camps in North Korea, the Chinese. And they produced what they call, towards prisoners, they called it a lenient policy, whereby, although they didn't believe in the Geneva Convention at the time, they had a policy of their own which they produced, which was called a lenient policy, whereby a prisoner would be kept under controlled conditions, and he would be, if it could be, provided with these small articles, which really saved the lives of thousands, I should think, thousands of prisoners that were under control, the control at the time of North Korea. So, getting back to the blacksmith, I was sat there watching him, and on the side of this tank, the tracks were blown off, but the bogey wheels were still on there. And I thought, well, I don't know. I better get them off easy, quite easy. Talking to the blacksmith in sort of pidgin English and that, I got two of these bogey wheels off of the side of this tank. And I thought, as they're providing bullocks for us, we'll make a small bullock cart out of the timber that we brought back from the hills. And we did. We made a small trailer. And we put a single pole up through this small trailer, and we got two of these bullocks, fitted them on each side of the pole, and they pulled our ration of timber back to the camp every day. In fact, we were bringing back more timber, and therefore some other chaps didn't have to go to the hills twice. And this went on until it was time to eat the poor old bullock. In the end, when the bullock meat ran out, there was only pigs left in the camp. Oh, by the way, we were killing our own bullocks by poleaxing them, and we were killing our own pigs in the end as well. The Chinese butchers showed our chaps how to kill the pigs, and they showed us how to kill the bullocks. And we were killing our own bullocks and pigs, and we always killed them down by the river. Now, an ordinary Korean peasant never, very, very seldom eats meat. In fact, the only meat they eat is dog. And probably about once a year they'll hang a dog and eat the dog. They breed them like a large husky type dog. And they'd hang it and they'd skin it and eat it, make hats with the skin, and the dog was cooked up as a special occasion, more or less, for the year. They very seldom ate meat at all. They were basically vegetarians that lived on fresh weeds and fresh rice, plus the pickles that they laid down in the summer for their winter meals. And we'd kill these bullocks, as I was saying, we'd kill these bullocks and pigs down on the riverbank. And from across the other side of the river, the Koreans always seemed to know when we were going to kill a pig or a bullock, because we would throw the entrails into the water. They'd float away downstream of the pigs and that. And the Koreans were always there to collect them. Directly, they knew we killed the pigs, the entrails we throw into the water, and they'd all float down, and they're all...